Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, Brian, I don't know about you, but when I told people I was going to Philly, what's the one thing people say to you?
They say, you know, be careful of the football fans because they're nasty.
Okay,
But after that, they say, be sure you go down and get a cheesesteak.
Yep, and where do you go? Well, you go to this one infamous corner in South Philly. On one side, you got Pat's King of Steaks, and that's really all we care about, right? Because right. We're joined right now by the proprietor of Pat's King of the Steaks, strangely enough, not named Pat, Frank Olivieri. Thanks for joining us, Frank.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
So it is true, though, you have a rivalry with Geno's right across the way there, right?
Well, there's a rivalry. It's something that the media actually created. But
so you guys get along?
We live in the same building.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We go to dinner like once every couple weeks. Hang out at the same coffee shop.
This is all a completely...
No.
It's a farce.
Because we've been told there's a war between you guys.
Hatfields and McCoys.
When you're price fixing, there's no such thing as war.
At least
I say that on mic?
That's a good thing. Okay, we appreciate it. You'll be hearing from the Obama Justice
that's
Department.
That's right. They'll be calling you right away, I'm sure.
Well, let me ask you, as a non-Philly guy,
okay,
what makes a Philly cheesesteak a Philly cheesesteak? I think it's the bread, frankly. That's what is distinctive to me. But
well, actually, the bread is probably the only thing that's indigenous to Philadelphia. Our cheese whiz comes from Wisconsin. Our meat's imported from Australia, New Zealand, Uruguay, Florida.
All right.
And onions probably come from down south, and, mushrooms from wherever mushrooms come from.
Yeah.
Kennett Square.
Yeah. So let's talk about this substance that you describe as cheese whiz.
Liquid gold.
What is it really?
Cheese Whiz is actually real cheese. It does have some real cheese in it, and it has a bunch of other stuff in it to, help it be real cheese. But it's amazing. It actually really enhances the flavor of a warm sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It does.
Are there spices? Are there peppers? Is there anything in there other than just the cheese and whatever your secret sauce is?
In the Cheese Whiz or
yeah.
the sandwich itself?
In the Cheese Whiz.
I don't ask questions. I just know it works. It's well. No, Kobe cheese. There's a lot of different stuff in it.
Well, you have a bag of cheesesteaks that you brought here. While I ask this question, why don't you dig one out
because
there?
We expected a taste here.
So,
as well.
Frank, I got to ask you, because the Democrats are in town.
Sorry about the mess.
Cheesesteaks.
Not the Democrats. Wow. I'm talking about the cheesesteaks.
Cheesesteaks have become a political thing. John Kerry, of course, when he ordered Swiss, that was a big deal. My understanding is you can order provolone or Cheese Whiz, but anything outside of that, that's a problem.
Well,
right?
We have provolone, Cheese Whiz, and American.
Okay. And then Scott Walker ordered American when he came here. Now, Scott Walker went across the street. He went to both of your places,
right? Yeah, he did the politically correct thing, so to speak.
Is there a difference between how a Democrat orders and eats a cheesesteak versus a Republican, or is this a bipartisan thing?
Well, it's a bipartisan thing, but by and large, only winning candidates actually come to my store.
Really?
Yes.
You can prove this.
Is that true?
I can prove it. There's a track record.
This is good.
We have
good
Bill Clinton
stuff.
Who won twice.
Yeah.
And then we have Al Gore and Senator Lieberman. We all know they won that election.
Oh, man.
Am I right?
Yeah. you go with that.
So I'm running with that. And then when President Obama came down, Hillary Clinton went to some other place in North Philadelphia someplace. And I said to President Obama, Senator Obama at the time, I said, congratulations, President. You just won the election.
There you go.
And he was like befuddled. I'm like, all the winning candidates come here.
So
this begs the question, have you seen from Hillary or from Trump yet?
No. I have a picture of Trump. He was friendly with my grandfather.
Oh, my God.
And Elizabeth Warren was down, but she's not in the race. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then she's a winner then.
Do you expect that at some point you'll be visited? Have you been given any sense? Because, generally when a big candidate comes, ahead of time.
Yeah, when the guy shows up with the big bulge under the left side of his jacket,
right
side of his jacket, yeah. You know that someone's coming.
So far, has that not happened?
So far, it has not happened.
So I got to ask you, you've been around for 86 years, Pat's the King of Steaks here in Philadelphia. At what point did it explode and take off, or was it an instantaneous thing?
Well, it's the business ran, quite nicely, but my Uncle Pat tried to drum up business in the 30s, and somebody had a facetious rumor going around that Pat was selling horse meat. during the 30s when everybody had gas coupons and stuff like that. So he offered a $10,000 cash reward to anybody who can prove it. But no one could prove it because he was the one who started the rumor.
That's brilliant.
But I think what really put us, you know, us and Philadelphia on the map in 1976, the first Rocky movie, there was a segment filmed at our movie, and we are the base store of the world-famous Italian market. And that's where he ran, and they threw him the orange.
You know, I want to ask you a question, though, about having the convention in your town.
You keep talking, Brian. I'm going to be right over
I noticed
here.
That you have not offered me half of that sandwich.
It's all yours. You just jump in here.
Well, you were eating part of it. I want to know how the town is faring, because I've been to other conventions, and often towns will say, you know what? It hasn't turned out to be the financial boon we thought it was going to be. So how is it working for you so far? Are you seeing an increase, an uptick in business?
Yeah, I remember during the RNC, we had like a 35 to 45% increase in our sales during that one particular week. This week, we're estimating the same thing because we are a democratic city.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it's going to be a lot better than the Pope fiasco. Yeah. The Pope fiasco was horrible.
How so?
So the Pontiff does not bring out cheesecake.
We were like
lovers.
Under military rule. I mean, they closed half the city down. I mean, I alone probably lost over $175,000 that week.
Wow.
Because they weren't letting anybody go anywhere. However, you know, we're seeing politicians going around. Media, it's great media boost for us. It's great media boost for all my competitors. It's a great way to spotlight Philadelphia and everybody who makes cheesesteaks, not just Pat's.
No.
Who came first, Pat's or Geno's?
Pat's did, 1930 for us, and Geno's in 1967.
Oh, so you passed. Yeah, 30-year head start there. Oh, all right. So it really isn't even
So they're latecomers to the game.
Latecomers to the game, and he has a great business over there.
What's the difference?
The difference? Well, I'm busier, firstly. there's really not much difference. There are a few ingredients and preparation techniques that are different. Like our bread comes from cousins, so basically the bread's the same. We use cow. He uses steer meat. Wow. We cook ours in soybean oil. He cooks his in water. Wow. We put our cheese whiz on top of the sandwich. He puts it on the roll.
This is all very interesting. Yeah. And very, it makes a huge difference, I would think. You know, not being in Philly, most of the cheesesteak experiences we get at malls or at other restaurants claim they have
like this,
a Philly cheesesteak. It is absolutely nothing like this.
Yeah.
It is true that the bread is different, but I got to say, usually we get provolone everywhere else. And also bell peppers and mushrooms. This is onion only. Now,
that's the bastardized cheesesteak. The original steak sandwich was with and without onions, and then one of our employees incorporated provolone cheese, sharp provolone, because that's what he liked.
Okay.
Right.
But then in 1957, my dad found Kraft Cheese Whiz and started putting it on just to... you know, make the sandwiches go out the window faster other than melting the provolone or American cheese on the sandwich.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that became the signature sandwich for all cheesesteak guys in Philadelphia.
So it's just the steak, just the grilled onions, just the cheese whiz.
Just the whiz.
And that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's simple. You know, there's, what, four ingredients in that? Bread, cheese, meat, onions?
You got to keep it simple.
That's it.
That makes sense. Yeah. And let me ask you that, and maybe this is a question that, you know, it's going to be against your best interest to answer, but a lot of times a place like this, Pat's King of Steaks, ends up being a place where all the people outside of Philly come when they come to Philly. But do Philly people come there, or do they have their own special place?
Yeah, you know, up until, I would say, the mid-80s, we were predominantly a local place.
Right.
But, you know, since Philadelphia has, you know, had Constitution Center and all the other great things we have going on here, we're recognized not only as a movie town, but a food town now. We're going through a big food renaissance. So we have a lot of tourists coming in to see the things that we have here. And so, yeah, we are a tourist place. And I like to kind of embrace it, hide in plain sight. Say, yeah, you know what? We're a tourist trap. But you only trap yourself by coming back.
All right. Frank Olivieri. He is the proprietor of Pat's King of Steaks, the cheesesteak place to go in Philadelphia. And, you know, we've been Facebook Live-ing this whole thing, Frank. So I feel like I've this is my Guy Fieri audition. I've been able to, like, chow down and stick this giant thing in my mouth and continue the interview, and I'm ready for
And the Facebook feed will prove that you don't share well with us.
Yeah, you know, it's been sitting here waiting for you to take a bite, Wilson.
But you keep eating out of the side of it. Well, listen, Frank, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate you coming down.
Enjoy your week in Philadelphia.
Oh, we will. We will. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening. listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And joining us on the line right now is retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, U.S. Army. He was the man in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Got a new book out called The Field of Fight, How We Can Win the War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. And it's good to have you with us, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. You point out you also are an advisor to Donald Trump in this campaign cycle.
Yes. Good morning, guys. How you all doing today?
We're doing very good. Okay, look, the name of your book is, I think, very interesting. It's called The Field of Fight, How We Can Win the War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. You were the person in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Before we move on to anything with this campaign cycle, I heard it said, I think you were, have told someone, that in the entire time you were in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency, you never once met with the President of the United States. Is that true?
That's very true. Yeah, sure.
Not
is.
One time. So he says that he wants to win the war against ISIS and radical Islam. You're in charge of military intelligence. You got as much information as anybody about where they are and how to defeat them. And the President never once was interested in hearing what you had to say?
That's a fact. And that's and that is also, you know, when you look at my background and the kinds of operations and activities and assignments I was in, you know, previous to my assignment at the Defense Intelligence Agency, it's pretty amazing that, you know, and for a person who was also had a difference of opinion in terms of how I was judging this enemy that we were facing. So, yeah, I never did. Never did meet with him.
Say, he didn't want to hear.
A real shame.
Yeah. Well, let me just turn to what's happening here in Philadelphia very quickly. We're not hearing a lot about the war against radical Islam or the war against ISIS here at the convention. Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not. I'm not surprised. It's actually pretty sad when you think about all the things that are going on and what has been going on, particularly in the last 2 to 3 months globally, the kinds and the types of attacks and the levels of attacks that are just on the country, the real tragedy down in Orlando that occurred not too long ago. It's just sad. So, I mean, it does a disservice to the American public because it sort of numbs us to what it is that, in fact, is happening. And I think that by not clearly articulating that, this threat to the American public, I think the President of the United States is making a huge mistake. And he's ill-advised, and I think it's part of his own ideological belief system that is why he doesn't do it.
Our guest is retired General Michael Flynn, and he's got a brand-new book out. And if you'd like to meet the general and get that book, you should go to his book event. It's tonight at Dallas Crown Plaza in Herndon. And, General, if I could ask you, I'm guessing as you advise Donald Trump on what his foreign policy may be when he, if he were to become president, you talk a lot about ISIS. Based on my reading and based on my understanding, ISIS is a major threat, not just because of their ideology and tactics, but because they have actually succeeded in establishing a caliphate there in part of Iraq and Syria. It's a major deal to actually control the swath of land that they control. So let me ask you this, since you were there as this all came about. Where did ISIS come from? How did this happen? And who was in charge of our foreign policy and who should have been in charge of keeping ISIS from gaining the foothold that they currently have?
Yeah, so just briefly, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was defeated, and things settled down in Iraq by 2011, and we were, you know, basically had settled the whole situation down. When the President of the United States, our current president, and Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State, when they made the decision to pull our forces out of Iraq in 2011, which was a political decision, wasn't based on the security conditions or the advice that the president was getting. That led to the rise of the Islamic State. So ISIS sort of rose out of the ashes of Al Qaeda in Iraq in the 2011, right into the 2014 timeframe. And we're watching all this occur. We're watching the increase of attacks. We're watching Syria unravel. We're watching Iraq unravel, and all of a sudden, By 2014, by the summer of 2014, ISIS establishes its caliphate. And so now this is 2016, so this is 2 years later, and these guys are following, this ISIS organization now is following its global plan, which we're seeing unfold around the world in various stages, from Bangladesh to the United States of America. It's sad.
But it's fair to say that the origins all stemmed from decisions that came about during Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's tenure.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the 2011 time frame that when the decision was made to pull forces out of there and leave nothing in Iraq, that was a poor decision, another sort of failed strategic decision that was made. And you know, and then when you throw in like a decision like going into Libya, which Libya held at the time, Libya held a whole bunch of Al-Qaeda prisoners in their prison systems. And as soon as Libya collapsed, a bunch of these senior guys were released from these prisons, and they're the ones back inside of Syria and Iraq fighting us now.
I get the impression that even now, it's a case of too little, too late, that the current president is doing the bare minimum that he has to do to keep things under control, but not enough to really go in and do what needs to be done. Is that your sense as well?
Yeah, that is. And I just describe it as a very tactical, narrow strategy. So one exists. It's just very incoherent, and it's not a winning strategy. And what we have to do is we really have to focus on a much more global strategy that's far more coherent and attacks this thing at all sorts of points. And number one is to discredit this ideology, discredit this very radical form of Islam. And we have to do that. We did it against communism for 40 years. This president does not even allow anybody in government to even mention the phrase radical Islam, when in fact many, many in the Muslim world, well, they recognize it. They recognize it for what it is, the leaders.
Well, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, will have to leave it right there. By the way, his book event tonight at the Dulles Crown Plaza in Herndon. It starts at 6 o'clock tonight, so if you would like to meet the Lieutenant General, make your way out there to the Crown Plaza at Dulles Airport.
General Flynn, don't be a stranger. We talk about your stuff a lot on the air, and it's great to have you as a guest.
Yeah, thank you. Anytime, guys. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. More of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And, Brian, there are a whole lot of Democrats around here, considering it's the Democratic National Convention.
That's what you would expect.
You would think so. A pretty prominent Democrat for our listening audience in the greater Washington area is Representative Chris Van Hollen, of course, representative from Montgomery County and also part of Prince George's County, right?
Well, it used to be part of Prince George's County, now parts of Frederick and Carroll County.
Right.
But hopefully in November, you know, the whole state.
Statewide.
But I'm working hard.
Obviously, he is a Democratic nominee for Senate in the state of Maryland. Great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you. Morning.
Let me ask you, I want to talk to you about some of the issues. A lot of times when we have you on, we talk about things that are very specific to Montgomery County or to the area. Let's talk about some of the larger issues because you want to be a U.S. Senator.
Sure.
Do you believe the Second Amendment, do you agree with Tim Kaine, the vice presidential nominee, that the Second Amendment is a personal right to bear arms? Or do you agree with Hillary Clinton, the nominee for president, that it is actually a right for a militia and it is not a personal right? Where do you stand
on
that?
Number one, I respect the Second Amendment and I respect the Supreme Court's decision. On that. And I think, though, that is the common sense gun safety measures that I've supported and many other people support are entirely consistent with respect for the Second Amendment. So, for example, the Second Amendment certainly allows us to make sure that we have universal criminal background checks so bad people and dangerous people don't get their hands on guns. The Second Amendment is perfectly consistent with making sure that if you're on the no-fly list, that you can't go down the street and buy a semi-automatic assault weapon or other gun. And the courts, as you know, have found that these common sense measures are consistent with the Second Amendment.
I know, and that's a policy answer. I'm trying to get a little bit more to what your personal beliefs are, what you think of this. So by saying you respect the Heller decision, that tells me, I just want to reaffirm, you believe that the Second Amendment is a personal right to bear arms, not just one reserved to a militia.
Yeah, I think that the Heller decision is the settled law and something we respect.
I want to turn to the convention and how it's been going here. I mean, the start, you got to admit, was pretty rocky. It was pretty rough the first day, and the Sanders people, I'm not sure, are completely mollified even yet. Do you think that they will get on board with the Hillary Clinton campaign now that Bernie Sanders has asked them to do so, and even actually took the unusual step of actually asking for the nomination last night?
That's right, and the answer is yes, I do. I mean, will every single one? No, but the overwhelming majority of Bernie Sanders.
But about half of the people walked out last night.
Yeah, my sense from talking to people, and let's look at the Maryland delegation, the Virginia delegation.
Right.
Overwhelmingly, the people who were supporters of Bernie Sanders recognize, as Bernie Sanders said, that if you care about the issues that he talked about and the movement that he has launched, you need to support Hillary Clinton. That Donald Trump is the opposite, will drag us backwards. So I'm just giving you my best sense here in the hall, especially after last night when Bernie Sanders asked for unanimous support for Hillary Clinton.
These emails, they were very damaging, and they showed that there was, some people would say, collusion between the Hillary campaign and the DNC to the detriment of the Bernie Sanders people. Others have quickly said, well, this was all hacked by the Russians. What do you think is the truth about these emails, and how do you have a DNC that is not, it can be neutral going forward when it needs to be?
Well, look, I mean, if you look at those emails, there are a lot of inappropriate emails. There's some outrageous emails. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz was right to step aside. And of course, our own Baltimore mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake,
right,
gaveled us in. The DNC then gave a full-throated apology. So I think that that is behind us. I mean, I do think, though, hacking raises lots of questions, not just for the Democratic Party, but for our political system. If, in fact, and, I don't know the facts yet, but if, in fact, the allegations are true, that the Russians or somebody else was responsible for the hacking and trying to interfere with our elections, that is a big deal, not just for Democrats, but for the country.
Real fast to follow up on that, because then I have another question. You said that it was right for Debbie Wasserman Schultz to step down as chairwoman. So was it right for Hillary Clinton to immediately hire her?
Look, what Debbie Wasserman Schultz is doing is she's going to go out there and support Hillary Clinton.
She's going to have a prominent position as one of the honorary chair of the
But just
the
like Bernie
campaign.
Sanders is. I mean, Bernie Sanders is also going to go out. I mean, he was the person who, has most at stake with respect to email. I should also point out that Bernie Sanders, throughout his campaign, did what he should do. I mean, he was running against the sort of Democratic establishment, and that was part of the attraction, part of the energy of his campaign. So we have to distinguish between what happened in emails at the DNC and the actual voting around the country. I mean, Hillary Clinton won fair and square more delegates, and I think Bernie Sanders understands that totally. He embraces it, and I think that's true of his supporters as well.
A lot of buzz here last night about the history being made, the first woman candidate from a major party officially nominated, Hillary Clinton. She's, you guys all think she's going to be the next president, first woman president. That's a big deal. You're replacing a woman who made history. Barbara Mikulski is a historic figure in the U.S. Senate. And, of course, you've already defeated Donna Edwards in the primary. Mm-hmm. She wanted to replace Barbara Mikulski as a woman in that seat. You're now running against Kathy Shalega, a woman, the Republican nominee. Isn't it the most respectful thing you can do for Ms. Shalega in the course of this campaign to grant her many debates so that her voice can be heard? You can, on an equal footing, debate her one-on-one. That's a very respectful thing to do. Will you commit to a series of debates today?
Oh, we've already said we're in discussions with my opponent's campaign, with Ms. Shalega's campaign, to set up a debate schedule. But you had a long wind-up to that question. I mean, Hillary Clinton, as so many have said, is not just a woman candidate. She is one of the most qualified people ever to run for president. The reason I'm supporting Hillary Clinton and support her early was because I think she'll be the best commander-in-chief and the best president. Barbara Mikulski, an incredibly talented person who also was the first democratically elected senator in her own right. These are people who bring to the table incredible energy and ideas and have been great for the country and great for Maryland. And I believe Maryland voters, as they did in the Democratic primary, are going to look for candidates who reflect their values and priorities and also want to get things done. I was really pleased in the primary to win the women's vote by 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So these, you know, at the end of the day, all of us, all voters, regardless of their gender or their color or their creed, I think want candidates who are going to not just talk about their priorities, but work hard to get them enacted.
I just have one last question here as our time runs down, and that is, it is widely accepted fact in this town that the Clinton Global Initiative is under investigation. I read a report this morning that, in fact, there's been a referral to the IRS over the activities of the Clinton Global Initiative. What is Plan B if the candidate gets in trouble?
Look, I mean, there are lots of allegations that get thrown around. Let me just say, the Clinton Global Initiative has done incredible work around the globe. They have saved millions of lives. They've invested lots of money to prevent people from dying from all sorts of diseases, whether it's AIDS, their malaria initiative. They have done good work around the world. And it is, you know, we're in the political season. A lot of Republicans who actually participated in meetings and conferences with the Global Initiative in order to do good work around the world. You know, before the campaign started, they were singing its virtues. So it is sad to see in this political season people, you know, doing the kind of things they're doing. But I would just, say to everybody, take a deep breath. Let's focus on the issues that are at stake in this campaign.
Representative Van Hollen, it's always good to have you.
We've
got
a
little over 3 months now, and I know you want to earn every single vote in Maryland. So we look forward to having you back often. I'm looking at your team now. We're going to have Congressman Van Hollen back often.
Yeah. They're all nodding in agreement.
Absolutely. So long as I don't have to sing, we'll be back. And I will say I spent a lot of time just in the last couple weeks in Western Maryland, Eastern Shore. We're fighting for every vote.
And all when it comes to singing, you're no Martin O'Malley. Let's agree on that.
That's for sure.
It is.
Congressman, thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Listen, if it's good for the Irish and it's good for the Scots, why can't it be good for Americans? I'm talking, of course, about doing away with the tyranny of trousers and jumping on board with kilts as a absolutely acceptable, if not desirable, fashion choice for the American male. Guys, will you wear a kilt? 888-630-9625. And ladies, would you be okay with your man letting it all hang out and wearing a kilt? 888-630-WML. I'm told, Brian Wilson, that to properly wear a kilt, you are supposed to not wear any
underpants?
Undergarments, yeah. That is what I'm told.
So you go commando.
I am told the way it's been described to me is if you're wearing something under your kilt, then you're actually wearing a skirt.
Is that right?
If it's a kilt. Even though and apparently, if it's really warm out, it's a very liberating thing. And it's been pretty hot lately, you know, let's face it. Here is Stephen Crash Villegas. He owns a company out of Seattle called Utilikilt, and it has become very, very popular, actually. It's exploding.
When I was born, you were told men wore pants or shorts. But really, pants anatomically aren't set up for guys.
No.
Men should be wearing the skirts. So at the time I created the Utilikilt, I was looking for something that was practical.
Yeah.
And cooler than pants or shorts. So I thought that the traditional Scottish kilts were a great idea, but I want something that's way more practical and pockets and belt loops and washable and something I can wear every day.
So I've looked at these things. I have not worn them.
Okay. You've just, out of curiosity, have examined them.
I have not worn them yet.
Oh.
It may not surprise you to know that I am completely open to the idea of the kilt, and Brian, I'm suspecting, is not. But these things, here's the deal. They're just like cargo pants. They are just like cargo pants. They've got the pockets. It's made out of a cotton, you know, twill kind of thing. It's just like wearing, you know, chinos, basically, and his shorts. But as Villegas here said, it makes more anatomical sense. Let's face it. There's certain thing that's rather constricting about trousers that a kilt will not necessarily provide the same problem. And so I am going on record right now saying I am open to this idea, and I am willing to try it out. Really, honestly, what's the look at me? I'm wearing cargo shorts right now.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the difference between this look and just sort of, you know, having the whole? It's not like, you know, I'm not going to look like an ice skater out there. I'm not going to do a Yamaguchi out there with the whole
little flouncy thing. You may be surprised to learn that I would never, ever in a million years consider wearing a skirt.
It's not a skirt. It's a kilt.
If I were to put on a skirt.
It's a kilt.
They would never let me back in the state of Texas ever again. Oh. I would be banned from ever entering the state.
Yeah.
And I'd have to turn in my man card. I mean, listen, come on. Look, there are certain things that, you know, I'm a guy with an open mind about a lot of things, but this is not one of them. However, it is interesting that you should say this, because when I was in Philadelphia, I went to this little pub around the corner, and I had dinner each night and ordered up food, and I became, you know, sort of conversational friends with the people who were working behind the bar and the wait staff, and I picked up on a conversation where the bartender, a guy, said he would totally wear a skirt.
I'm telling you,
because he said, listen, when I go out playing golf, I get so hot. I would totally wear a skirt out on the golf course.
That's right. Think about it.
And
just,
I went,
just
are
imagine.
You kidding me? Really?
Just imagine the ventilation aspect here, the built-in AC.
Yeah, well, look, I'm...
you got to get over yourself. Bill in the district, you're on WMAL.
What do you think, Bill? What do you think?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I wear kilts all the time. I have three of them.
Really?
Yeah.
And they're great, aren't they?
Now, excuse me. Do you go commando underneath the kilt?
Well... I used to, but I do not now, because when I was in a bar one time wearing one, someone who had a little too much Jameson decided to show his friends that I was not wearing
He lifted it up on you?
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Well, I mean, it was pretty hilarious at the time, because I had had a few Jamesons myself.
All right, Bill. So you endorse this, and in fact, you are a practicing. Now, do they have like a tartan? Are they all very clearly ethical? Because see, these kilts that they're marketing here with utility kilts, they don't look like you're honoring a Scottish or Irish heritage. You can get them in various colors. You can get them in denim. It's just part of your wardrobe.
Yeah, I generally like the tartan. I have a couple different ones, but I do like the Irish National, which orange, white, and green.
Right. All right, Bill, thank you for that. And by the way, Sean Connery wears kilts. And are you telling me that he's not a real man? Well, are you telling me Sean Connery wouldn't be accepted in Texas? Sean Connery?
Listen. I don't know any guy who would wear one. I honestly, except for you, Larry. That's it.
Now you know what. Jay, and I got to run this by the wife. That's the only thing that's stopping me.
Let's get her on the line.
Yeah, Jay and Woodbridge, you're next
up. She feels it. I bet being from Oklahoma, she's not going to be too keen on the idea.
Jay, you're on WMAL.
First of all, I'm not going to wear a kilt because I don't have the legs for it.
That you do have to take that into consideration, Jay.
Yeah, I got skinny legs. I can't wear a kilt. But it's funny to me how people get real scientific when they want to make their point. Now, all of a sudden, it's anatomically incorrect to wear pants.
Well, Jay, listen, you may mock the whole anatomical issue. I'll leave it at this. Maybe, Jay, you and Brian don't have the same kind of physical issue there that I do. Sleeping. Jackie in Silver Spring, you're on WMAL. What do you think, Jackie?
I think absolutely yes. I'm Scotch-Irish myself, and I think that kilts are just great. And I think that any guy who can wear one well gets bonus points in my book.
See?
But the other thing is, you know, they are, I mean, it is a lot more airy, you know, wearing skirts and, you know, kilts and so on. And in the summer months especially, it can be very cool. The only point for trousers, of course, is that they're more practical, especially for, you know, work and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Does Mr. Jackie partake in the kilt?
Oh, there's no Mr. Jackie, I'm afraid.
Oh, all right. Well, I just thought I'd go on a limb.
But my brother has some, and he can wear them pretty well, and he likes them. So.
All right, there you go, yep. Jackie. See, another endorsement, Brian. The tide is turning against you.
Yeah, no. It's not turning against me, because I am secure in my position.
I think you should wear them with your cowboy boots. Now that's a look.
That would just be
weird. That would be really weird.
Well, I just think that, you know, even good people can make bad choices from time to time.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9 Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
For the very first time, I walk over to the nearest restroom here on Radio Row in the Wells Fargo Center. There's a sign there that says, all gender restroom.
You betcha, all 73 of them.
I go, all gender restroom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't really want to do that.
No.
So I go down to the next one, and I'm thinking, well, this will either be a men's or a woman's.
Right.
And it says, all gender restroom.
Mm.
I guess all of the restrooms here are going to be all gender. I guess that's the message the Democrats are going to send. And so, you know, in dire need, I went into the all gender restroom.
Yeah,
and
you did.
And I went to the stall, and I took care of business.
Yeah.
And while I'm in there, all of a sudden I hear female voices in the bathroom with me. I didn't know whether I should come out of the stall right then and there. Should I wait until it gets quiet again and there I don't hear these women having a conversation right outside the stall?
You were trapped in there.
I swear to God, I didn't know what to do.
No.
So I come out, and of course there are these three women who are over there near the sinks, you know, where I need to go and wash my hands. And I went over and washed my hands, and as I got the paper towels and dried my hands, and as I'm leaving, I said, this is really bizarre.
Oh, microaggression.
And I don't know if I was
trying. Yeah, we need a safe space after that.
I just was walking out. One of the ladies sort of yelled at me as I was leaving. She goes, all gender restrooms, hon. So what should I have done?
Here's what I would have done. Leaving, I would have just, throw out the paper towel, toss it in there, do a little hook shot, and said, left the lid up for you, ladies.
Oh, no.
What?
See, now that's aggressive. That's not even a microaggression. That's just aggression.
If they want all gender bathrooms, they got to deal with the lid being up.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.